This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Do you take this woman as your lawful wedded wife?
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring.
With this ring.
I thee wed.
I thee wed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to With This Ring, number 14. Ooh. I'm your host, Ryan Everett.
I'm Cindy Everett.
And tonight, we will be going over NWA/WCW Clash of the Champions. We continue powering through the GWCW list.
We're going to finish strong, though.
Yep. So, Clash of the Champions is kind of it's an interesting concept they had. So, way long ago when we talked about Survivor Series, if you remember, that came up because Jim Crockett Promotions, NWA, always had Starrcade.
That's right.
Thanksgiving.
We talked about that on Thanksgiving.
So from 83 to 86, it was just a closed circuit thing. They'd show it, like, it would be in Greensboro, but they'd show it in Charlotte, Atlanta, the big towns around WCW country.
Gotcha.
So then, in 87, they wanted to get it on pay-per-view. Pay-per-view was starting to take off. But Vince McMahon heard that, and he was like, screw that. I'm having my own pay-per-view. I'm making up a thing out of nowhere, Survivor Series. And at first, the NWA tried to like back down and be like, okay, we'll hold our event at 2:30. And the cable companies were like, great. We'll have a deal where instead of paying, you know, $20 for each, pay $25 and we'll give you both 7 hours of wrestling. Rand was like, no. Show Starrcade, you can't get Survivor Series, and you can't get WrestleMania 4.
Ooh.
So, most companies picked WWF because they were the proven commodity in pay-per-view, and NWA was not. So then, in January, and the pay-per-view companies were like, you can't do that anymore, no more. Once the date's booked for pay-per-view, it's going to be
on. You can't bargain with it.
Yeah. So then, in January, WCW had the Monk House Stampede. A pay-per-view, and the main thing in it was they had all these battle royals around the country, and all the winners of that went into this other battle royal in a cage.
Sure.
Yeah.
Dusty Rhodes. How many people were in a cage?
Like 15 or so.
It's kind of a lot.
Yeah, and to get thrown out, you had to get thrown
out of
over
the cage. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's not... When I was a kid, it sounded awesome, but actually watching it, it's not great in practice.
Well, yeah, that's a lot of lifting and
over. Like, why would you go to the top of the cage as much as everyone happens to do in this match?
Right.
So, WWF couldn't counter-program it with a pay-per-view, so instead they counter-programmed it with the Royal Rumble on USA Network. So a free show. So then WrestleMania 4 came around, and WCW was like, come on, Turner Television, you got to help us with this. So they held their own free show against WrestleMania, and it was Clash of Champions on TBS. So then they did it the following year against WrestleMania 5, and then they just kind of kept doing it like quarterly.
Okay, and would they always have it coincide with the WWE event?
No, it only happened the two WrestleManias.
Gotcha. Cause, yeah, it seems like that's a surefire losing the ratings if you're going against.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you had to choose between watching it for free and TBS versus paying money.
That's true.
Although, as things have kind of shown, it's two very different audiences anyways.
Right, yeah.
So, it's not as much of...
Different markets.
Right. So...
They kind of push each other then. So,
yeah.
They kind of... indirectly are responsible for a lot of the WWE specials and structure that they still have.
Yeah.
You know, it's like some healthy competition's good.
Yeah, competition's this is definitely good, but...
The caliber of this...
Yes.
competition. Maybe it's not. I mean, I think they had good ideas, but as we've talked about many times, the execution is just not there.
So we didn't look at the first one, but the first one does have a famous match. It's Ric Flair versus Sting, and it goes 45 minutes. Time limit draw.
Oh.
And of course, a time limit draw where they have judges out there, and it still ends in a draw. It's scored 2-2-1.
Well, what?
By the judges.
Who's the one?
Huh?
Wait, 2 for Sting, 2 for Flair, and 1 for...
1 for a draw.
A 1 for a draw? Oh, yeah. My gosh.
So, then we took it up, though. The first one we watched was Clash of the Champions for Seasons Beatings, obviously in the holiday season.
Yes.
At the UTC Arena in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Ric Flair and Barry Windham of the Four Horsemen against the Midnight Express with James E. Cornette.
Yes.
And at the time, Ric Flair was the world champ. Barry Windham was the U.S. champ. So they were like the top two guys.
So they're the faces.
Well, they were the heels.
I'm sorry. Yeah, whatever.
Yes.
I'm tired.
So it's a 17-minute match, back and forth. And, of course, the horsemen cheat to win.
Yeah, I don't really understand. So Jim Cornette was carrying a tennis racket.
Yes.
For some reason. Why?
So that was always his gimmick. He was like a preppy rich boy.
Okay.
So he had a tennis racket and would hit people with it, and they always claimed it was loaded.
Oh, that's right.
But see, here, the Midnight Express had turned face. They were feuding with the original Midnight Express.
The new originals?
The new originals. Managed by Paulie Dangerously.
A.K.A. Paul Heyman.
Yes.
I heard a little inside of him with the long hair.
Yes. Yes.
That was funny.
A very different looking Paul Heyman than we are used to nowadays.
Mm-hmm. And this one had a shoe.
Yeah, so at the end...
Yeah, J.J. Dillon
gives... J.J. Dillon gives, I think, Barry Windham his shoe, and he hits one of the Midnight Express members, and they pin him and steal a win.
Yeah. But yeah, this one was just okay.
Okay.
For me. And Ric Flair, I think, did most of the work, especially for the...
Yeah.
The two of that team, so...
Yeah, I just... It's interesting to me, because it's... Two, like, the Midnight Express mainly are known for being heels, and they don't really change that much here. Like, there's plenty of times they're breaking the rules also.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good... I like when people become faces but still cheat. They don't change their principles or their moves. They just still wrestle how they are.
Yeah, who they are. Yeah.
It's just they're getting cheered now instead of booed.
That's all very fickle.
Yes.
Well, yeah, got to stick to your style then, I guess. Which for them was cheating. But yeah, this one was just okay.
And then next we went a year later to Clash of the Champions 9, New York Knockout.
Oh, because that makes sense because they did multiple ones a year. So they, yeah. Okay.
So yeah, a year later, and this was November of 89 at the Houston Fieldhouse in Troy, New York. And, of course, in the ads, they called it the New York Knockout and made it seem like it was happening in New York City.
Madison Square Garden?
Yes.
Yeah. Did they do any WCW shows at Madison Square Garden?
They did a couple in the Paramount, which is the theater next door.
See any good movies at the Paramount? Really?
Yes.
So, no.
So, no. That was as close as they could get. To...
That's a nice analogy, too. Yeah.
Yes.
So. Okay, this is Ric Flair versus Terry Funk in an I Quit match.
Yes.
Lots of Coors Light sponsorship, I noticed.
Yes, Jim Ross is very big on talking about how he'd love to be at home drinking a nice cold Coors Light while watching this match.
The original sponsor content, the original Sponcone. Terry Funk's a very, brawler.
Yes, yeah.
He's it's
probably, one of the best brawlers of all time.
He's just going to, punch and slap and chop. It's not going to be a lot of moves off the top or a lot of suplexes. It's just...
Well, eventually he would do moonsaults as a 50-year-old man.
Well, good for him. I will not be doing moonsaults when I'm 50, I have a feeling, so good for him. And we also both noticed that the first time the ref dragged the mic over, it was on with the cord.
Right.
And then someone gave him the cordless mic.
Then, they go outside the ring, and I think out there was a submission or a I Quit question, and somehow someone gave him a cordless mic, and he had that then for the rest of the match.
Yeah, figured it out.
Which was an improvement. That's always good to be able to move around.
And I know that we watched another one of these I Quit matches, but it's just a little bit of an awkward... I get it, but yell into the mic. What's the first one we watched when the first was just yelling into the microphone?
Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard.
Yes.
Yes. There's a lot of yelling there, yeah. So this, though, it goes back and forth a lot. And earlier in the year, Terry Funk broke Ric Flair's neck with a pile driver on the table. Ooh. So they kind of had it set up that Terry Funk's working the neck.
Oh, yeah, they mentioned that a lot.
And then eventually Ric Flair starts working on Terry Funk's knee and leg and gets the figure four. And
yeah, that's how he gets that he wins.
Terry Funk fights it for a while. He doesn't, it's a good that it's not like, oh, he put on his finisher, it's over right away. Like,
right.
It really does show that he's trying to fight out of it. But
was that common with Ric Flair? As soon as he put his finisher on, they'd be like, oh, done.
Really, it's uncommon for Ric Flair to win with the figure four.
Right.
Because a lot of times, I mean, if it depended who he was wrestling. Like, if he was wrestling, like, a guy below him, yeah, he'd win it pretty quickly. But, like, Dusty Rhodes or Randy Savage, if he'd win with it, it would be like they'd be knocked out or they'd black out from the pain.
Sure.
Sort of thing. Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, when your leg's hurting, you usually black out from pain.
Well, you know, I'm not a doctor. It could be. So, this one's good, but, yeah, different. Terry Funk's style's a little...
Yeah,
it's definitely... I don't want to watch it all the time.
Different, and it's...
Change of pace.
It's different from WCW.
Like, yeah.
In general. Like, it's even... Especially for, like, Ric Flair. This was 1989, so the beginning of the year, he had the three, like, super scientific matches with Ricky Steamboat. And then to come off of that with just brawls with Terry Funk was quite the contrast.
Yeah. Keeps him interest, you know, on his toes, I guess. Yeah. Probably to do a lot of different styles and different times, but yeah.
And then at the end, Terry Funk turns face and is a man of his word and shakes Ric Flair's hand.
Yeah, that was very important.
Important to note. So then next is
1991.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't write it down.
Clash 17 at the Savannah Civic Center in Savannah, Georgia.
Makes sense. The Enforcers versus Dustin Rhodes, and then he has big reveal of his tag team partner to be Ricky Steamboat.
Yep. So it was originally supposed to be Barry Windham, but Barry Windham had his hand crushed by Larry Zbysko and Arn Anderson.
Was it for real, or was that like part of the story?
It's kind of weird because he definitely is out of action for a while. So I think it might have been like half, like he probably had an injury that he could have wrestled with, but it was better to take some time off to let it heal.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah, so his mystery partner comes out in a big dinosaur.
Yeah, that's right.
Dragon costume. And it's Ricky Steamboat, fresh off of a run in WWF, which instead of calling him Ricky Steamboat, they just call him the Dragon and act like he's someone new completely.
Gotcha.
Even though he had wrestled it. One of the biggest matches at WrestleMania 3 years earlier.
Yeah, everyone remembers that match. So, I was going to say, what was his, he was just the Dragon?
Yeah.
You said?
Instead of Ricky the Dragon. Like, it wasn't just a nickname.
Right, yeah.
This is, he was big in the Breathing Fire hair also.
Oh yeah. I like that.
So this is only 15 minutes, but it is like...
Really?
Yeah. It is very, like... If you want to know what a WCW style tag match is, this is like the template for it.
Okay. Yeah, the Enforcers definitely fought dirty a lot. I have that in my notes. Doing a lot of double teaming a Steamboat.
I especially like when they'd have one guy in the Boston Crab and the other guy would push on the partner's head. That gave so much leverage.
Exactly. Yeah, hey, just like the shoe. Just like the shoe is very powerful.
Yes.
That extra manpower. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was funny.
And then at the end, there's some mix-ups, and all four guys are in a point. And
of course,
Ricky Steamboat tags into Dustin Rhodes, which I think Larry Zbysko doesn't see. Ricky Steamboat comes off the top with the crossbody for the win.
Oh yeah!
So new tag team champions.
Mm-hmm.
And then we keep the Ricky Steamboat tag boat going.
Gathering steam.
Yep.
When did he retire?
1994.
I would say that's right. He wasn't around that long. Well, when did he start?
Like the mid-70s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so he really did wrestle for a while. But
yeah, but he had like...
I think
he had come in spurts and goes and like...
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. Because just like... And all the casual wrestling and then through the years, like we were watching Raw or whatever. I think he never really shows up.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays he just shows up like... as a legend or
right. But even like when you watch old matches, you never really was in besides the WrestleMania 3.
Right. Yeah. Because he kind of he's in later years since he's gotten divorced, he's admitted that like his wife was kind of a controlling and would be like, "You have to come home now," and like. So there'd be, like, years where he wouldn't wrestle, and he'd be, like, running his gym in North Carolina. Which, I mean, it's kind of upsetting, because that was, like, would have been, like, the prime of his career.
Yeah.
That he's just sitting in a gym in North Carolina, not doing much.
Did he have kids?
Yeah, he had, well, he had one kid, and he took off. So he had the injury angle where his throat got crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was so he could go home and be with his wife, who was bedsick with her pregnancy. So, but she was fine. The kid came out fine. Then he won the Intercontinental title from Randy Savage. And then they wanted, so at the time, like if you were the Intercontinental champ, you were the number two guy in the company, and they had two tours each night. So he'd be the main event on the second set of shows. And when the kid was like 6 weeks old, she decided like, oh, you got to come home and not wrestle as much. So Vince McMahon was like, well, screw that. I'm taking the title off you then. You were just off for 5 months. You can't have...
Well, 6 week old.
If you're a wrestler, that's kind of... I mean, it's a little better now, but...
Right, yeah. There's no paternity leave?
No. Well, when you're not in the union...
True.
When you're not even a contracted employee...
Yeah, what type of, like, labor rights do they have?
None, but that's, like, a big thing that, like, the Screen Actors Guild president came out and talked about how she wants to start looking into the WWE, and...
Really?
Andrew Yang, like...
Oh, that... How do you get himself involved in this?
He inserted himself in there. Because he was a big wrestling fan growing up, and he doesn't like how they're dying.
So now he has to get them all UBI?
So now he wants to, like, try and, like, if he's Biden's, like, Secretary of Commerce or something, that'll probably be, like, a big point of his is to try and figure out something.
Get them all, like, 1099 workers or whatever.
Yeah, which will probably just result in Vince McMahon firing anyone who signs up for it.
Right, I was going
to
say.
Just finding people that are desperate enough to wrestle that they won't join a union.
Gotcha. I forgot about Andrew Yang.
Yep. He wants to give everyone money and...
Yeah, that didn't work out too well. No. Well, his campaign, I mean.
Yeah.
This is not a Universal Basic Income podcast.
No, it isn't. I want to take a quick time out here and just tell everyone about all the great new things going on at the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Check out the PTB Wrestling Network store and show off your favorite podcast logo on great merchandise like t-shirt, hoodies, and more. Just go to www.tpublic.com and type PTBW in the search. Get yourself a nice With This Ring coffee mug.
Oh. On episode 562 of the Place to Be podcast, Scott and JR are with Jennifer Smith to head into Madison Square Garden for the June 3rd, 1991 MSG House Show. Yep. Sounds very specific.
Yes, it is. Do each show.
Oh.
PTB NXT is back. Tim, Jenny, and Jake discuss the June 2014 episodes of NXT Fallout from TakeOver.
On the newest NWA Saturday special, Scott and the Doctor discuss episode 9 of UWN Primetime Live, and then Scott, goes on his usual loud tirade.
On the newest episode of The Main Event, Scott, Nate, and Steve go around wrestling from Impact to AEW to New Japan and everywhere in between.
On the newest Highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and the guys recap the 11th episode of Impact and Weekly Pay-Per-View number 108.
Please rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Just search Place to Be Wrestling Network. And you can also, while you're doing that, check out the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed with some great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theater, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, Piece of the Action, Making Mount Rushmore, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. Subscribe today.
And while you're at it, subscribe to a pair of tremendous podcast feeds. First, Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position is the home to Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and more.
And also make sure to check out the new North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George.
the official home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrink Wrapped, and more.
Join our rejuvenated Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, look up Place to Be, and request an invite. Discussions and fun with wrestling, movies, tournaments, and all forms of pop culture.
We are coming down to the home stretch of our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have until New Year's Eve to do the research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board.
Be sure to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by Jon Crow, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey.
And if you're doing online shopping from Amazon, which many people will be doing soon, especially if you're in a state like Illinois where stores are getting shut down, be sure to click on the banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps out the Place to Be Nation with no cost to you. So then next we go to Clash of the Champions 22 in Milwaukee at the Mecca.
Yes.
Which, as we've talked about before, stands for... It's like the Milwaukee Entertainment Convention Center.
That sounds right.
Arena.
Yeah.
And so this was January of 93. And it's Shane Douglas and Ricky Steamboat are the tag champs against... At the time, it's just Flying Brian and Stunning Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Soon after this, they would become the Hollywood Blondes.
Ah, okay.
And they were a tag team that... They're only around for about 8 months, but they're... Their stars shone very brightly for the time that they were around. And this is kind of, I think it stacks up well with the previous tag match.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cheating from the heels.
Yep.
A lot of Ricky Steamboat as the face getting beaten down and making the hot tag.
Yeah, he definitely gets the brunt of it.
Yeah.
That one too. They were good though. They were athletic. I feel like this is like a good counterpoint to the Terry Funk
right
punch fest.
Yeah,
there wasn't like a lot of moves off the ropes, but there was like whenever they would get hit, they would like jump back.
Yeah.
Oh, what's the term for that?
They'd sell.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Steve Austin was selling it big time.
You do mention moves off the ropes. This was during the Bill Watts era where he banned moves off the top rope.
Why?
Because he didn't like, because he was. He had a very early 1980s philosophy and didn't realize that he had Ricky Steamboat and Brian Pillman in the company who were like doing moves off the top rope was their thing.
Right.
So
whoops.
Both of them though do moves where they springboard up onto the top rope and jump off, which technically isn't the top turnbuckle, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah, that's a technicality.
And then what did you think about the ending of this match though?
It got a little crazy again. Yeah. So Steve Austin somehow grabbed the belt and used that to hit Shane Douglas.
Right.
So they got disqualified because the ref did see it. Because, of course, the ref missed all the shenanigans going on. All of them. But he did catch that one. And then they started beating up Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
And then some other people, then like a bunch of other people came out to the ring.
Yeah.
Didn't quite get that.
Well, it's back then, like, all the faces were friends with each other. So when a face was getting beaten up, the lower end guys from earlier would come out.
Had to rush out and
try to save them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then actually, this kind of works well because then a couple of weeks after this, on a different show, Steve Austin and Brian Pillman beat Steamboat and Douglas to win the tag titles. And then a couple Clash Champions later, the Hollywood Blondes would lose the belts to Arn Anderson and Paul Roma. Because Steven Regal was part of the Hollywood Blondes because Brian Pillman got injured and they needed a replacement.
Oh.
And this was a whole thing with the Disney tapings where they would tape 3 months of shows in Disney.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Like over 2 weeks.
Talk about that, yeah.
And they had a pay-per-view match between the two teams and they decided everyone was already on the newsletters talking about how Oh, well, obviously Arn Anderson and Paul Roma are going to win because they're taped as tag champs. in a few weeks. So they were like, ah, we'll change it on them. Gotcha. So Arn Anderson and Paul Roma lost, and Steve Austin and Pillman won, but Pillman injured his ankle. So they had to get the titles off him.
Oh.
So they had to put Stephen Regal as,
well, let's put as a Hollywood Blonde
for the night. And obviously it didn't work.
Yeah. I was going to ask you a question. Yeah.
And then we keep the Steve Austin, Ricky Steamboat train rolling as they compete against each other in a singles match a year and a half later in August 94 in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
From the Five Seasons Center. Apparently in Iowa they have five seasons. Yeah.
Just add that extra season to give them the edge.
Yes. And in this, the stipulation was that if Steve Austin got disqualified, he would lose the U.S. title.
Gotcha.
No champion's advantage, as there usually is. And half the match, we're talking about how Hulk Hogan got attacked by a man in black.
Oh, that's right. I do remember
We found the thrilling conclusion to the man in black saga at Halloween Havoc.
Okay.
When it was Brutus Beefcake.
That's right. That was... Okay. Oh,
so we watched it a lot of sequence, but yeah.
I was going to say, and that's what makes why Sting is like on a plane from Chicago.
Yes.
Why would like Sting, like, is he the self-appointed, like, detective in this story?
Yeah,
or,
well,
is he friends with Hulk Hogan? Or?
Well, he kind of was forced to be friends with him, because again, all the faces have to be friends, and this is the two top-level faces where... As if you're Shane Douglas, you have Brad Armstrong coming out to save you. But if you're Hulk Hogan, you have Sting coming out to save you.
Gotcha.
And Sting was at his charity event in Chicago.
Yes.
The board, we learned during this match, this great U.S. title match, we're going to talk about Sting getting a charter flight.
Yeah.
About 30 minutes from Chicago to Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, they probably could have focused just on the match and would have been just as
well. Yeah, well, this kind of starts a five-year running thing in WCW where they talk about Hulk Hogan and his goings on more than the matches taking place in the ring.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. So, but this is a 16-minute match. Steve Austin had won the belt. Well, he defended it against Ricky Steamboat at the previous pay-per-view and won. And he has great tights that say Dragon Slayer on the ass.
Yeah, that is nice. Oh, yeah, they're like very understated.
Yeah. And then towards the end of this, Austin tries to throw Ricky Steamboat out of the ring, and that would have been a disqualification.
Mm.
But Ricky Steamboat doesn't want to win that way, and he pulls himself back in.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And actually, when he hits his ass on the ringside, on the apron, that's what actually screwed his back up and caused him to retire. And it's like a
of all
routine
little things,
spot
right,
that he did
yeah.
in every match, basically.
Gotcha.
And that was enough to knock him out. He came back for a little bit in 2009 as like a 50-year-old guy and had great matches because that's just what Ricky Steamboat does. But yeah, so this, and he actually wins the belt here from Austin.
Oh yeah.
With his favorite finishing maneuver. Someone goes to body slam him and he small packages them for the win as his specialty.
Yes.
And then yeah, so at the pay-per-view a couple of weeks later, he had to forfeit the belt. Hands it to Steve Austin, and then Hacksaw Jim Duggan makes his WCW
debut.
Right,
yeah.
Wins the belt in 30 seconds. Because, you know, that's what should happen.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, it's not a lot of Jim Duggan matches.
No, yeah. Either
in WCW or WWE.
WCW, or WWF, he had the 1992 Royal Rumble, but he's not very much a focal point in
that. No.
Just like
not
here,
so much.
I don't think he's going to sneak in. Yeah,
never quite really got very high in the ranks.
Right. Well, he knew his role. He made lots of money. He still makes lots of money.
Does he?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I guess. Why not?
Yeah, I mean.
If you're responsible, you can live off of that.
Yeah. He goes to all the, well, back when there were conventions and whatnot.
Yeah, and he had like a Zoom with Hexon.
I'm sure he's on Cameo.
Probably.
The big thing this week was, since it was The Undertaker's retirement again,
mm-hmm.
he sold, they had $1,000 cameos.
Oh, wow.
And some of them are great.
Are
like The Undertaker encouraging you to do good in your new school.
Aww.
The Undertaker wishing, there's one that it's like, AJ, you're fine. You're real fine. And if Darnell can't see that, then he will rest. in.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's not quite Scott Steiner, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, you did a pretty good one. Well, that's a lot of money, but
yes.
Was it for a charity or something?
No, it's for the Undertaker. Oh. It's for the Undertaker to get his money.
Get that money. I'm sure he's plenty rich, but it's probably just like, yeah, do this.
Yeah. So the next one, we just to the very next Clash of the Champions in Jacksonville, Florida, the Jacksonville Memorial Coliseum. And this one also features another Jim Duggan versus Steve Austin match, which goes 54 seconds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's really hard to see why Steve Austin left very disgruntled by WCW.
Having to fight talks to Jim Duggan.
In sub-1-minute matches.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that is not the match we watched.
Nope.
We watched Vader versus Dustin Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is 11 minutes. Nice and quick.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a short one. Harley Race is out there,
yep,
too.
Yep, Harley Race is doing his thing in his sweet satin jacket.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, the crowd was super into this one. This one was,
yeah,
people were very engaged.
Very hot, and it's just, it's weird because Dustin Rhodes wrestles it. I mean, he's a big guy. He's mm-hmm. like 6'6", 270.
I see that.
And he was like throwing Vader around for part of it. Like he hits a superplex,
yeah, that's
a couple other suplexes, some slams mm-hmm. and stuff. And
yeah, that my notes too. It was very impressive how he could get that. Yeah. I mean, I know Vader has to kind of leverage that body weight, but still, he's still doing it.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And I think this was like kind of at a time, like when Dustin Rhodes first came in, a lot of people were like, oh, he's just getting pushed because his dad's Dusty Rhodes and stuff. But like by here, it's pretty obvious. No, he's actually
good.
Really good at it.
How old was he at this time?
In 94, he's probably 25. Yeah.
Okay.
April 69. So yeah, he would have been 25. At this point, and he's still wrestling today.
Is he?
Yeah.
In AEW?
AEW, yeah.
That's a long time to wrestle.
Yeah, but I mean, he's had off time also here and there, and lots of drug rehabs. And
oh, really?
I think he's okay now, though.
Good, yeah. I guess if you enjoy it. But
and, I mean, your brother's one of the vice presidents of the company.
That's a good point.
So
yeah, you kind of may feel obligated.
Yeah, you're not going to have to really go for a job interview, probably.
Yeah, but he won't be 15 getting slammed around like that.
Well, I mean, he probably, once he's done, like, he's not, like, a featured heavy guy, so he'll probably, like, if they ever were to open, like, their own school or something, he'd probably, like, be guided into that role as, like, a coach. And
gotcha.
He probably even does some of that, like, now, but
right,
just every once in a while wants to
to put on a little tight slap on the old gold dust. Is he still gold dust?
No, he can't be gold dust.
Oh, sorry. And
AEW doesn't have the copyright.
Who's he in AEW then?
He's just Dustin Rhodes, but like he'll wear like face paint and stuff.
Mm.
It's kind of weird.
Well, I guess that's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
Change your name. Yeah. Just change your image. Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Harley wrote. No, it was good. Except I wanted it to be a clean match. I don't know why. Maybe because I liked it so much. So Harley Race got there in the end and started messing around.
Yeah.
Vader win one, I was like, come on.
Yeah, but he doesn't really, he gets involved, but he doesn't, he like gets on the apron and Dustin Rhodes goes after him.
Right.
So it's Dustin Rhodes' own fault. Mm. Should have left him alone.
Sure, he would have scrabbled after him.
Probably. And then last, we did not watch a match from the last Clash of Champions.
Oh, we're going to talk about what we just watched?
Yes. But we did. So Clash of the Champions 35. So there is a 3-year gap.
Okay.
Of Clash of the Champions that we didn't watch a lot of. And that was really because they kind of started de-pushing the Clash of Champions because in 95 Nitro came out.
Okay. So kind of spoke their attention.
And kind of Nitro.
There, yeah.
Like, before Nitro, you didn't have, like, a whole show of main guys fighting each other. Like, Raw would have one main match, and everything else was, like, this, you know, The Undertaker versus a jobber, where he would just win and do an interview and progress his story. But Nitro came, and it was actually main guys the whole time fighting each other. So, and that was one of the things that was cool about Clash of the Champions. But now, if it's happening every Monday night,
what's
the point of it? So it kind of got de-pushed, and they just hit 2 a year for a while until this is the last one.
Oh, okay.
But in the last one, we have the great, since Oh, all these were on TBS also.
Gotcha.
So during it, they're talking about the great the great TBS series of Dinner and a Movie.
Yes.
Which ran from 1996 to 2011, I can't shockingly.
2011. That's 10 years too long.
And the great comedian Paul Gilmartin and Claude Mann, the chef.
Uh-huh. Oh, he was a comedian too? The chef?
No, he's a chef. Oh. I think he's an actual chef. Gotcha. That's why he doesn't.
What else was Paul Gilmartin in?
Let's see.
He can be known for just, he can be known for about in a movie, but what else is on his resume?
He had a weekly podcast called The Mental Illness Happy Hour.
He has that now or used to?
This hasn't been updated apparently for a while.
<'Cause> Why is that?
It says in 2011, Gilmartin launched a weekly podcast. And then in its first year of production, the show received over 1 million downloads. It currently ranks as one of the most popular self-help podcasts on iTunes. But that's from 2012.
I highly doubt. Okay. I feel like you'd find the rankings, and I don't think we're going to see the mental. What's it called? The Mental Happy Hour?
The Mental Illness Happy Hour.
Okay, I'll look for it later.
So he does not live in South Holland. He currently resides in L.A. Again, though, when this is...
He could be back in South Holland. This is 2012. He'd be quarantining.
He's an accomplished practicing woodworker, crafting pieces in a Danish modern style.
Him and Nick Offerman could get together. They're south of Chicago roots.
Of course, he went to Sunken City.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you do in Chicago. Or South Holland, I guess. So anyways, they talked to Mean Gene early in the show about how they're going to be making some jerk chicken for the jerk
thing. That's right.
And we show them the next day.
That's right, yeah.
But then later, Mean Gene checks in on what they're cooking. And they've made some macho nachos, some macho mayonnaise.
The macho nachos is just like sludge.
Yes. The macho Gestapo, which they put on...
Gazpacho, not Gestapo.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Which they put on the counter.
I just put it down on the counter. Yeah.
And then some NWO orca.
NWO okra.
Okra.
Orca.
Yeah, big whale.
And then the cream puffs.
Yeah, the WCW cream puffs.
Uh-oh.
And Mean Gene is not happy about this. Talks about how WCW is a great organization, along with Dinner and a Movie. And then they rip off their shirts to reveal, oh my goodness, the Dinner in a Movie has turned to the NWO.
Yep. That's what happened.
And then, of course, Randy Savage comes out and cuts a promo. Because why wouldn't he?
And then Dallas Page comes out, and I don't know what he does.
He gives a diamond cutter to
Martin. But why does he do that?
Well, because he's very upset that they've turned NWO, and he's not an NWO fan.
Oh, well. Whatever. I don't think I mean, obviously I saw the commercials all the time growing up, but I don't think I ever watched a Dinner in the Movie.
Yeah, it wasn't very good. I mean, it was whatever.
But now it's like 1,000 cooking. Like, I feel like, Food Network's always could have been a thing, but that's one of the first shows I remember with that involved cooking and...
Yeah.
More like a mainstream thing.
Right.
Nowadays, everybody's into it.
Yeah, now it's... overdone.
Yeah. Too many.
So, looking at the six matches, what would you have? How would you rank them?
Yeah. As you know, I don't really do this in advance.
Right.
So. I don't know. I feel like there are a lot of good contenders this week. I did like I'm going to go with, just because I need to make a decision because I'm tired. I think number one, I'm going to put the Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas versus Fly and Brian and Sudden Steve.
Oh, okay.
Put that as my number one. Even though they interfered at the end, I did like the Dusty Rhodes Vader one. Dustin Rhodes. I'll put that at number two. Number three, I like the Ricky... I do remember watching the Ricky Steamboat Steve Austin one.
Yeah.
Enjoying that one. That one's really good. I'll put that at number three. And then number four, I'm going to say Dustin Rhodes and Steamboat versus the Enforcers.
Okay.
Five, I do like that. Five, I'm going to say the Ric Flair versus Terry Funk. And then an I Quit match. And then six, I'll say Ric Flair and Barry Windham versus the Midnight Express.
Okay.
Which I liked, but, you know.
Right. Something's got to be.
Exactly. Last. This is my six. And then the weird bird's eye views they kept doing, too, during the match. Yeah. I didn't care for that.
Yeah, that was.
And Paul Heyman wasn't there, so it's not like I don't want to give too much weight to the fat factor. How about you?
So, yes, I also had Midnight Express versus Ric Flair and Barry Windham 6.
Oh, okay.
And then I actually had Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas for Steve Austin and Brian Pillman next at number 5. Oh,
really? Yes. Why's that?
I like it a lot. It's just kind of like, it's just something has to come.
Gotcha, right.
It's really not a knock against it. It's just praise for the others.
Gotcha.
And then, so what did you have? You had one that, two was Vader, Dustin Rhodes, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And then three, Steve Austin, Ricky Steamboat.
Yep.
Four was that Ricky Steamboat and Dustin Rhodes or Ric Flair and Terry Funk?
Dustin Rhodes and Ricky Steamboat.
Okay. So, yeah, I had, and then, so my number four was also the Enforcers versus Ricky Steamboat and Dustin Rhodes. Copied you. And then next I had Ric Flair versus Terry Funk, and then I had Steve Austin versus Ricky Steamboat as number two.
Okay, yeah.
And then Vader versus Dustin Rhodes. It's becoming very apparent to me as I'm doing this that Vader is probably my favorite WCW wrestler.
Really?
Yeah, just any match with him where he's just, there's not a lot of
being a big guy.
And there's stuff. Not a lot of rest holds in Vader matches.
True.
I mean, especially in these good ones of his. I mean, there's ones where it's like he sits in a bear hug for 5 minutes, but
I gotcha.
These top end Vader matches are just.
He was jumping around a lot too.
Yeah,
he was like not jumpy, but then he was like on the ropes.
Yeah,
like
he was big for the ropes.
Yeah.
He's not afraid like to get German suplexed and thrown around for a big guy.
Yeah,
it's pretty good to see. I like that a lot. So I always liked Vader, but
this is just kind of solidifying it.
Yeah, I'm getting very.
Is he alive?
No, he died a couple years ago.
Okay,
I remember watching the Boy Meets World Vader.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yep, I remember that too. Clearly, I'm sure we all did.
Yes, everyone watched a nice couple of Boy Meets World episodes.
Good. Alrighty.
Yep. So next month we will take a view to the granddaddy of them for the granddaddy of them all for WCW Starrcade.
Oh yeah. Okay.
We will be watching more of after Vince McMahon chased it away from Thanksgiving. It became like the Christmas time show. So it kind of stayed there. So that will be our next trip, or not our last WCW trip, but our last. Before the polls will end for this project.
Gotcha. Can we rewatch all of our top matches from each week?
We could do that, yeah.
Because I know like you've been keeping track, and I've been keeping notes on my phone, I think.
Determine your number one.
Exactly. When I watch my number one from each week, like, will that be a clear winner?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Maybe in the quarantine.
Yes. Christmas break,
yeah. Well, we'll see. It's more about making sure the little people
yes.
are cared for.
All right.
All right.
Until next time, though, we will see you later.
Bye, everyone.